You are listening to Nip Tuck Talk Radio. This is a live broadcast, and with me this morning is Dr. Claudia Kotka from the Washington Institute for Dentistry and Laser Surgery in Washington, D.C., and this is the first part of a three-part series about your dental health, and we're going to be talking this morning about how to choose a dentist. Please stay tuned.
Join cosmetic surgery Nip Tuck coach, beauty expert, and author of Safety First, A Consumer Guide to Cosmetic Surgery, Michelle Garber. Michelle's goal is to empower listeners and help them make safe cosmetic surgery procedure choices. This fun and lively show explores the world of beauty and cosmetic surgery and features expert guests on a variety of topics. No hype. Your host, Michelle Garber, is here today to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic surgery.
Good morning or afternoon if you're on the East Coast. This is Michelle Garber, your host. And with me today is Dr. Claudia Kotka, and I'm delighted to have Dr. Kotka back for a special three-part series on dental health, and this is part one on how to choose a dentist. Good morning, Dr. Kotka. Oh, it's afternoon on the East Coast.
Yeah, good afternoon. Wonderful to be here again. I'm really looking forward to a very productive hour coming up.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to have you again. Dr. Kotka is founder of Washington Institute for Dentistry and Laser Surgery. She's a guest contributor to New Beauty Magazine and has been on talk radio, ABC, NBC News as dental and oral health expert. So I know it can be really confusing to talk about what type of dentist to go to, because a dentist is really a general word to describe professionals who specialize in oral health, right?
Correct, yes.
And like my dentist, for instance, is a general dentist, but he also does veneers and other restorative work. So I think I'd love to clear up some of the misconceptions between the general dentist and the restorative dentist and the periodontist and the endodontist. It sounds very confusing.
Of course, and I can certainly appreciate that. In general classifications, we have, of course, general dentist, and then we have specialists. Of course, we are ruled by the academic professions and the curriculum, as well as the continuing education efforts with respect to various different specialties and directions. So by academic curriculum, of course, and CODA, according to the ADEA, which is American Dental Education Association, we have general dentistry and general dentists, and then we have various specialties. For instance, periodontics, those are the specialties that deal with gum and bone aspects. Then we have oral surgery. Oral surgeons, of course, deal with a lot more expanded incorporations toward head and neck areas, for instance, or major facial reconstructions, as well as implant placements and pathology, cancers. And then we have orthodontics, which we are very familiar with in this country. And those are the specialists who deal with braces and the movement of teeth. And, of course, we also have oral medicine. Oral medicine specialists deal with the pathologies, lesions in the oral cavity or related to systemic manifestations in the oral cavity. And then we have prosthodontics. And prosthodontics is the reconstruction aspect, either fixed, meaning it's not removable, so you can't take it in and out of the mouth, or removable, which you can, like dentures and partial dentures. And this is the area of specialties that incorporates and focuses on reconstructions using different biomaterials, crowns, veneers, bridges, but also obturators, for instance. So we draw from the maxillofacial aspect that I mentioned earlier, which is the oral surgery, and that's where some of the major reconstructions, perhaps after cancer surgeries and more larger defects. With respect to... Yes?
It sounds very confusing.
Yes, it is.
There are so many different aspects of dentistry, and I'd like to break them down for our listeners. So let's say, for instance, that someone has a toothache, and I think right away they think, okay, I have a toothache, I'm going to go to a to a general dentist.
Yes. So let me just start off the bat. For instance, I didn't have a chance to mention endodontists, and of course they're not the least important. Of course, they are the specialists that deal with root canal therapy and diagnosis and treatment planning from that regard. But back to your question, any patients ought to start in the general dentist realm and then general dentist office. The reason why is because general dentistry, of course, deals with the overall aggregation of data and evaluation of findings and conditions, and essentially formulates a diagnosis of the whole picture. So what we want to do, we want to also obtain all the aspects of the systemic conditions for that particular patient and the profiling, and that is what I do in my practice. And then I start to understand the nuances and the variables that have an impact on the smile, on the functional movement of the jaw, and, of course, the aspects of oral health in general, which involves tissues, involves the soft tissues, the hard tissues, the teeth, the health of the teeth, the health of the structure of the enamel and the dentin, and also, for instance, the salivary production, you know, or the moisture of the mouth as we, you know, go about and live productive lives. So it's very important to start from that platform, and that is where all the collection of the findings occur, and that's all the general starting point of collecting x-rays, for instance, imaging, or other technologies that particular dentist feels they want to add to the general repertoire of what we have available to us.
Is this like then going to, let's say, a general practitioner?
I would
say for your overall health, and the general practitioner examines you, and if you have something specific that needs to be addressed in terms of your health, they will then usually refer you out to a specialty.
So within the scope of general restorations and caries and gum issues, yes, everything is can be dealt with in the general dentist practice. When cases become more moderate to severe is when that particular practice may make a decision that a referral ought to occur to a appropriate specialty, or perhaps it might decide earlier on that it wants that specialty involved. It is within the opportunity and I would say the privilege is given to both parties, both the patient and the provider, to discuss the nuances of the findings and decide whether or not a interdisciplinary or another discipline will be involved in that particular diagnosis and or treatment. That's really left between the patient and the clinician. And, of course, we will, I'm sure, discuss much later or later perhaps the nuances of the skill set that a clinician has and perhaps a general dentist has, and also the areas of interest professionally, clinically, that is unique to that particular individual.
So the first step then, as I hear you, would be to go to a general dentist. If you have any oral health issues, that would be the first step. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it would be the first step, and it would be a protective step, because a lot of the general nuances and the findings are collected all at one time and integrated and have the opportunity to be integrated effectively, so that other things that might, for instance, not necessarily directly relate with one particular discipline may also be captured at that time.
So let's talk a little bit about the general dentist and the general dentist skill set and their education. As all medical practitioners, skill sets are different, education is different, and not every dentist has the same skill set or education. So then how do people determine who to go to if they think they have multiple problems with their oral health, or they have a very specific problems? I mean, there's so much out there.
Sure. So I would say that the first thing that comes to mind in terms of what affects the skill set for any clinician would be obviously their own given talent in that particular line of practice, and it would also obviously reflect with the academic and curriculum that individual had the opportunity to, of course, go through. And so various curriculums across the country, certainly we know, are exposed to many different tiers of schools, various different interests. The schools, of course, compete for research and support and funding, both from the government and otherwise, to promote essentially and put together a curriculum that's cutting edge, that is science-driven and integrated in, as much as possible, a real-time, real-demand patient. Of course, in academia as well as in other organized scenarios, that sometimes has larger laps of applications because the research takes time to do and the applications have to be vetted and so on and so forth. But that's a general trend. And so the school preparation has, of course, a huge impact in terms of the comfort level of the clinician once they graduate, as well as their delineated interest, of course, with time. And then the second aspect of the continuing, for instance, interests of that clinician would be related to their continuing education. So in my experience, and I'll give myself as an example, I was very interested in the very thorough interdisciplinary diagnosis, collecting of data with respect to systemic profiling in the patients. So I wanted to really understand all the variables that contribute to the oral health aspect with respect to health and aesthetics. And within that, I neared into technology-driven applications as well as reconstructions that are in function of multidisciplines. And, early on I realized that end results are, of course, more dependent on the nuances of what relates to the mouth, but also extends to the joint, to the muscle system, to the neurology system. And so that within that aspect, I developed strong interest, and I followed those through, for instance, in my temporomandibular disorder treatment, the oral medicine aspect that I have followed through the 90s, and practicing in every day, and as well as, for instance, reconstructions with biomaterials that are very friendly biologically, and that's where the technology aspect comes in. Of course, also expressed by laser applications to help, for instance, keep procedures to be minimally invasive, increase the healing potential, and essentially relate into more stable results.
So what I hear you're saying then is you've been trained as a general dentist, but with a specialty in restoration dentistry. Is that correct?
So I've been trained as a general dentist at University of Michigan. Prior to that, I had a very strong science background, and I'm a science nerd, and I'm very openly admitting to that. So I integrate a lot of science every day in my practice. And in addition to that, of course, I vet and scope out new research, both in the core sciences, meaning in cellular molecular biology, in optics, which relate to laser, as well as in the clinical disciplines like prosthodontics, for instance. So in my continuing education, I tend to involve my collaborations, if you will, with the more specialty groups. So I have stronger collaborations with the prosthodontic community as well as with the oral medicine community, for instance. And that's where I draw my my cutting-edge continuing education so that I maintain a very up-to-date repertoire of new findings that my patients can have access to today.
Then what is the difference between a cosmetic dentist? If someone is thinking about cosmetic dentistry and veneers and they're looking to totally restructure their smile, would they seek out a cosmetic dentist, or would they seek out a general dentist who specializes in restorative dentistry? Where would they go? How would they determine
Sure.
who to go to?
That's a very good question. So cosmetic dentistry has been a term that's been coined more from a public aspect, and the profession, I believe, had to respond to it in a way that, of course, you know, we can speak a lot of terms, terminology that are scientific, but it's important that when we communicate, it's easily understood. And I think that cosmetic dentistry is an example of that translation, if you will. So by virtue of cosmetic dentistry, we tend to understand that we focus on things that are beautiful and regenerate to, an aesthetic and beauty-driven rehabilitation. But in my professional opinion, and I have to say that as a disclaimer, I don't differentiate necessarily in terms of the treatment planning or even sometimes in the actual treatment between cosmetic rehabilitation and functional rehabilitation. I strongly believe that the two are codependent. Now, with respect to what we consider as beautiful, perhaps a shade difference of white, or perhaps a different shade difference of a yellow, that is a personal choice, and that's a personal perspective. However, with respect to choosing cosmetic-driven procedures, by and large, it would, I think, be understood or suggested that cosmetic dentists would have delineated a stronger interest in the aspects that affect the beauty aspect of the treatment or a treatment option. That involves, of course, not just the actual practice of doing or cutting the tooth for a veneer, but also involves another partner in this whole scenario, which are dental technologists, dental technicians. And within this particular group, there are two major differences, actually, almost three. There is dental technicians that, are trained either on site or, various other programs. The appropriate program for dental technician does give a certification, so it's a CDT certification, and that curriculum is a solid curriculum in terms of understanding the biomaterials that you work with so that you can really identify the thinness of the porcelain, how and that reflects with how white or yellow you can make it and what your parameters are, so that it actually has a huge impact on the delivery. Because if for instance, the clinician doesn't allow for room for the porcelain to to be present in the tooth structure that would be accepting that, if the technician cannot work and is not comfortable with working with thinner veneers, let's say, or thinner parameters of ceramic, like let's say for instance 0.5 millimeters versus another ceramist who can only work with 1 millimeter, let's say. Those are
the
nuances.
Well, how does a consumer though understand what questions would a consumer then ask the cosmetic dentist? The cosmetic dentist specializes in the appearance of your mouth, veneers, bonding, mm-hmm. whitening of the teeth, and I know that, as you say, there are different clinicians that have different trainings. There's different labs that create the veneers and the bonding material that have different skill sets. So there's a lot involved when you're speaking about cosmetic dentistry and restorative
yes.
dentistry.
Yeah.
How does an individual sift through this? Are there certain questions that they should ask the dentist before they commit? Because it's very expensive.
Absolutely. So just to highlight the last point I was going to make, the most eloquent preparation of a technologist or a dental ceramist would be the master level dental technologist, and those are very few and far in between. And I happen, for instance, to work with master dental ceramists from Europe, for reasons that in Europe the program is a lot more solid, for instance, that and a lot more prevalent in terms of preparation that it is in the United States. They have a lot of experience with working with various different thickness or thinness of ceramics. And so going now to back to the general question of how do patients really find out what type of team is present either on site or what is the collaborative aspect? I think questions just have to be raised at the introduction level. And the school, for instance, the academics background, and I think most dentists are very comfortable sharing that, so you can find
Hello.
That on the web. Yes, hello?
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about what we were talking about, the variations of training for the technicians and some questions that people can ask before they commit to restoration of their mouth, because veneers are very expensive. If you do an entire
yes.
mouth, it's several thousands of dollars.
Right. So perhaps, you know, all the details that we've shared is a little bit more technical. But a good basic question would be basically cases that the practitioner might have done that who is willing to share with, and clinicians are very comfortable sharing that before and afters. Of course, there's a story to be told on each case, and specific details can, of course, be shared in terms of the steps. And the
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So you were talking about different dental technicians and their qualifications, and then I was asking you, what kind of questions should a person ask before they make a commitment?
Sure. So basically, we discussed a little bit about the academic preparation. The continuing education, for instance, in terms of groups and memberships and collaborations various practitioners engage in. Also experience, discussing of cases before and after, for instance, photography, and also discussing of the nuance of cases, because not every case, most cases are unique into themselves. You know, every, just like, for instance, we have our own unique bodies, our teeth, and the alignment is very unique configuration. The case most likely does have to be customized to those particular nuances. And I would suggest that I think it's prudent when we are dealing with major reconstruction and a lot of commitment, both financially as well as time and clinical commitment and treatment commitments, it's wise to obtain a second and third opinion, and that is why I recommend in my practice.
You've got to ask questions. I would imagine, too, just like if you're going for any cosmetic surgery, that you would also look at before and after pictures. Correct?
Yes, of course, yes.
And ask about the dentist's background and training, about the
yes,
lab
I think
that they use, the materials that they use. So you really have to get educated before you make this commitment.
Yes, and, it really depends on also the, I think, a very perhaps uncomfortable aspect of the equation lies with the budget. And I think that it's important for patients to have a very realistic understanding of the commitments, financial commitments that the treatments, are required. And I oftentimes discourage starting any treatment when there are budget considerations that patients don't feel comfortable with, because oftentimes once treatment is started, it's difficult to not finish the case without of course, incurred consequences and surprises. Bear in mind that sometimes complications can occur. So, you know, the time availability and commitment to the process, you know, both from a mental perspective and just the psychology of being comfortable and the nuances that it takes to go through that rehabilitation. Sometimes cases take as long as 1 to 2 years, if maybe perhaps even more involved, if it involves implants and surgeries. So I think it's prudent to have a very honest discussion with the team, but as well as a very realistic acknowledgement of what the budget, the personal budgets are. And that is what I think gives patients and clinicians the opportunity to form comfortable decisions that they are willing to will live with, and they will also translate into realistic expectations.
Now, you mentioned that you use labs in Europe. Is that correct?
So, yeah. So, I work with, I tend to collaborate with master dental technicians. Yes, they have their training in Europe, and some do in the United States. And most of these laboratories aren't, for instance, as large and as some of the, I would say, generic laboratories where they have perhaps not just tens of technicians, but hundreds of technicians, let's say. They are able to work with me specifically on a case. You know, their work is just as meticulous as my work as a clinician. And the translation of the knowledge base that I have from the clinical aspect once I prepare the tooth, to translate into where that three-dimensional new contour lies, it is extremely difficult to execute. And so planning, just like, for instance, building a home. Imagine you have a land and you're building a brand new home. You really can't start without plans. You can't start without measurements of where things belong and a certain sequence and phase. The same occurs for the reconstruction of teeth. And then, of course, there's another layer, you know, that characterized by the gums and the bone and the fact that we are a living system. So we're not just dealing with static positions, but also dynamic positions as well.
Is the technology different in Europe?
Yes, there is some nuances of differentiation. I find that my conversations with my technicians, by and large, also integrate nuances about mathematics and using mathematics-based systems to identify more precisely where the current baseline and findings are. If you can imagine a three-axis system, and for instance, I start from the head and neck, and of course I try to find the axis of the body, and then of course I draw that into the head and neck area. And for instance, using technologies from Europe that help me trace the joints in real time, using, for instance, a very small magnetic field. These are the technologies that are exclusive to the European market. And so I do have some technologies that I have imported from Europe that I could not, of course, obtain in the United States. You know, I think by and large, certain Training focuses, I think, in Europeans like to work more specifically with the biomaterials and more minutia approach, whereas I think the American system, I think, focuses on a mass distribution and helping the population gain aspect with respect to the health in a much more broader sense. And so sometimes, you know, you have to diverge when you're trying to achieve those.
So you have the best of both worlds, right?
I like to think so.
Right, the world here
I like to think
and
so, exactly.
Over in Europe.
Yes, and that is part of the reason why I do travel internationally, and I've done that for a long time.
Now, what about teeth alignment? I know today there's Invisalign, and a lot of general dentists carry Invisalign, and cosmetic dentists carry Invisalign, and then you've got your orthodontist. When do you go to the orthodontist, or when do you just go to your general dentist or restorative dentist for teeth alignment, and what's the difference?
Mm-hmm. So we have the technologies that are, of course, industry-based, Invisalign versus braces, let's just, and of course we have other systems like, for instance, 6 month smile. But by and large, I tend to rely on specialists, in this particular case, orthodontists, who have additional 3 years of training in the science of movement of teeth within bone. We're not just interested in moving teeth within the bone, but also making sure that we are moving it at a certain rate so that the stability of the dentition after the teeth are moved is much more readily stable. In addition to that, the preparation of the case by involving a specialty like orthodontics helps me, for instance, save natural and perfectly good healthy tooth structure, and I can execute more minimally invasive procedures to give results that can be obtained, of course, but I might have to sacrifice more tooth structure if I would have not executed the orthodontic treatment planning. With respect to would I execute an orthodontic braces, if you will, in my practice, I tend to involve an interdisciplinary approach. I think that the training validates their recommendations and indications. You know, not to say that when we have one or two tooth movement, of course, we are all trained to do that and we're all trained to do larger cases. It's just my areas of focus have been delineated, you know, since my training and even earlier on, and I like to stay within those realms.
So you now, would refer course, out to the orthodontist?
Yeah, so I don't, yes. So basically the patient would be referred to see an orthodontist that I collaborate with. But I think what's important to just be noted here is that I collaborate, of course, and I share with the orthodontist the conditions, the findings, the baseline, and also delineate to the orthodontist where I would like the dentition to be placed. And as a team, we come up with options, and could be sometimes two or three multiple options, and with various liabilities, various risks, and also perhaps different results. And those are, of course, chosen by presented to the patient, and the patient would make the recommended, their personal decisions.
Sounds like then it's really important to choose a dentist who does have an interdisciplinary approach that can work with teams of other specialties to really get the optimal effect that they're looking for, especially if we're talking any restorative or tooth alignment.
I would, that is my professional, personal recommendation. that working with specialists like orthodontists and endodontists and oral surgeons allows me to coordinate much like a quarterback kind of coordinates the whole nuance of the movement. Same thing. I coordinate the entire system, and I delineate exactly where we are and where we need to be with respect to the optimal reconstruction. Now, there's sometimes, you know, there's different phases in between, and there's sometimes patients will say, you know, I don't really want to go to that end. I'm comfortable with this particular only so far, and that's okay. In my practice, it's the patient's decisions. I never make decisions for my patients. And the collaborations with the various disciplines allows me to give them the most accurate variety of options and also synergistically integrated so they can make informed decisions.
So if a patient comes to you and needs, let's say, a root canal, would you perform the root canal, or would you send them to an endodontist? And let's just define what an endodontist does.
Sure. So let's say, for instance, that we have a patient, and hypothetically, patient either has a chief complaint that they have been told they need a root canal. An evaluation for that particular chief complaint will be done by me, and if that's the case, depending on if there's any, for instance, need to protect that tooth while the work is being done, some other treatment maybe ideally to be started before the root canal would be retreated or executed so that protection is there. But the actual root canal part would be referred to an endodontist, and they would do a diagnosis. I think that also having a second opinion, particularly by a specialist, is incredibly important. And once that treatment is completed, then they have specific instructions when to continue the treatment. And in my practice, I like to adhere to the science again, and within 2 weeks generally is when we recommend finalization of the part of the tooth so that the root canal that has just been treated can be isolated nicely without leakage.
So an endodontist basically deals with the nerves of the teeth?
Yes, I'm sorry I did not answer that part for you. Yes, yeah, so the endodontist is a specialist. Thank you for bringing that up. Is a specialist who deals solely with the diagnosis of evaluating whether the nerve is alive or not, whether the nerve is damaged. For instance, sometimes nerves can be damaged by cavities or trauma, or, for instance, from clenching or grinding. And an endodontist would be the most appropriate and experienced individual, because that's all they do all day long, to identify if that nerve is not, it's not alive, let's say, I won't use technical terms here, or if it's alive, or if it's, for instance, affected but can be reversed, it's a reversible pain or inflammation. And then the decision, of course, is made by the patient how to proceed. Now, as I say this, it's oftentimes a very, very involved discussion between that part, which involves the endodontic aspect, and the reconstruction. So sometimes you have indications for doing endodontic treatment because, for instance, there might not be a lot of tooth structure remaining there. And in order to save, to have something rehabilitative in that space, we need a lot more tooth structure. Those are more seldom, of course, not as often scenarios, but I just wanted to highlight how important it is for the collaboration between a restorative dentist and the specialist, in this case the endodontist, because they both contribute to the particular restoration of the tooth, and it's an active involvement. I think that perhaps sometimes patients may appreciate having access to the treatment all in one facility, and that's wonderful. But sometimes that's just not accessible, and the various areas would have to, you know, be considered to do the travel instead of going to one facility. Now, by and large, having said that, restorative general dentists have traditionally always and are trained successfully to do root canal therapy. I am just not one of those individuals in terms of I know what I can do with, you know, immense reproduction. I can reproduce things and execute things effectively and efficiently, and that is what I choose to focus on. Now, I can certainly execute a root canal, but it may take me, you know, maybe 2-3-4 hours, and that is not necessarily in the interest of the patient.
Right.
I think a lot of dentists today.
I think a lot of dentists today do have one-stop shops, and also a lot of people today, like as you say, to go to a dentist that can do everything. Because I know, like my dentist, for instance, my dentist does restorative dentistry. My dentist does general dentistry. I don't know if he does root canals or not. But yes, for some people, it's a lot simpler to just go to one stop. But I can see how it's really important that if you really do have a lot of issues with your teeth, that you go into a dentist who also has an interdisciplinary approach. I like that approach. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yes, and I think that also the prudent thing comes in when, you know, I tend to, one of the areas that I focus on in my practice is early diagnosis, so that we can obviously focus on prevention and early intervention. And with opportunities to discuss scenarios with specialists who have so much more experience in that particular field as a narrow focus, laser beam focus on that, is substantially beneficial, so that treatment may not have to be, you know, re-executed later on. You know, every time we, you know, I take a burr and I cut, you know, that particular tooth structure, you know, some of that tooth structure, you know, is compromised because of the fact that you're retreating that surface. And so the idea is to minimize the intervention frequency and to maximize the stability of the biomaterial as it is at the delivery time.
Now, what if someone has teeth grinding or TMJ? Where does that fall into the specialties?
Mm-hmm. So let me make sure that I heard you correctly. You said teeth whitening, is that right?
No, grinding. Grinding. Teeth grinding,
okay,
thank you for
clarifying that. So teeth grinding and temporomandibular disorder, TMJ is the abbreviation for temporomandibular joint. And teeth grinding and clenching is a quite complex condition. It does relate to the teeth position and the muscle adaptation in terms of hyperactivity. And, of course, all substantiated by growth development, of course. So oftentimes during developmental stages, as children, we can, of course, use appliances that are made by either the general dentist as well as and/or orthodontists. But with time, the complexity of each of the condition within each individual might be different and will be different. And so this particular specialty has not been, for instance, delineated as a true specialty, as I delineated at the early introduction of our session today. So it is a practice, a treatment that is practiced by various different specialties within, including general dentistry. And it is one, for instance, area that I have taken a very strong affinity for, It started, of course, at University of Michigan. University of Michigan has traditionally been very focused on occlusion bite, which is the way you bite your teeth and the way the teeth come together and function, which is at the base of understanding the adaptation as we chew, as we bite, and, of course, the development of chronic conditions like clenching and grinding. And,
so you can go to a general dentist then to, if you have TMJ or need a night guard for teeth grinding. So a general dentist
yes.
can usually help you with that.
Yes, they
you
can.
Don't need to
yes,
see an
course.
Endodontist.
No. So the endodontist, for instance, like we suggested, focus on the nerve and the system of the vitality of the nerve, and that's that specialty.
Okay. And an orthodontist would not work with TMJ as well?
Orthodontists traditionally have some curriculums, for instance, involve the aspect of the temporomandibular disorder. Of course, the temporomandibular disorder involves the anatomy of the joint and the tooth position. So that specialty does obviously focus on that, involves that. I am... I'm not sure in terms of the actual bite with respect to the modification, how many, for instance, orthodontists or they engage with the appliances aspect of the of static or dynamic appliances dealing with the actual disorder itself.
So then again, we're starting with the general dentist.
We're
focusing on the general dentist as
yes,
your first stop for anything having to do with your mouth, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And an oral surgeon specializes in extractions. Is that correct, or any jaw surgery?
So an oral surgeon would specialize in any type of extraction surgeries, implant placement, for instance, modification of bone, of course, extending to major surgeries which require hospitalizations or the use of a oral surgery facility like one in the hospital. They also do, of course, reconstructions, perhaps those appropriate after cancer, for instance, removal cancer surgery. We are speaking in April, so April is Oral Cancer Awareness Month, and oral cancer, for instance, is a quite aggressive disease, and about, I think, 66% of oral cancers actually are diagnosed in late stages. So majority of the lesions are quite aggressive and larger, and the reconstruction aspect is more involved. So, of course, that's where an oral surgeon would be involved. And now, of course, we also have smaller surgeries, like, for instance, removal of a HPV lesion or, a papilloma in the oral cavity or... other surgical applications, depending on what the general dentist might identify, and of course refer out.
I see. Well, that's all really fabulous information, and it's a lot to take in. And as I said,
yes.
I think the first step is a general dentist. Now, a lot of people have a fear of dentists. I know I myself has a fear of dentists. And sometimes people choose dentists based on their philosophy about how to handle a fear, or whether they use sedation, or whether they have nitrous. Some of those questions always come up because
mm-hmm.
today, some dentists don't cater to that patient and in making them comfortable because they don't have the tools. What do you say to the patient that comes to you and is just really frightened? How do you handle that?
So I have to adhere to the same approach I do with clinical in other aspects of my clinical practice, and that is I always like to target the problem in terms of the origin. So instead of, for instance, using sedation, which I can do, I oftentimes I am naturally attracted to helping the patient overcome their fear and becoming part of that process. And in this particular case, a dentist would be the ideal individual to start that process. Of course, trust has to be established. And for that reason, I slow down my treatment, particularly at the very beginning, because I like to give the opportunity to the patient, first of all, to proceed at the rate at which they are comfortable. And second of all, to give them the opportunity to establish positive experiences so they understand.
But isn't it better sometimes just to give them that sedation because that's what they need in order for you to do the work that you need to do? I mean, sometimes it's something that they can't overcome, and in order to do the work, they need to be sedated a little, whether it's nitrous, a little Valium, or whatever other technologies you may have for them to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's I think this is a personal choice. You know, I've dealt with, in my practice, I've treated, of course, had the privilege of treating systemically healthy patients, but also, for instance, a lot of medically compromised patients, including patients who have undergone cancer treatments, special needs patients, Down syndrome patients, as well as other rare conditions and rare diseases, and including mental health. And I have to say that being exposed to the, you know, it's a standard of practice. Sedation is a standard of practice. I've had the privilege of doing treatments in all of these classifications of patients where, you know, I changed the way I interacted with the patient, and I allowed the patient to drive the process. And that has always, you know, maybe perhaps it starts with a visit where you don't get to do a treatment, but if the family, for instance, of the patient, let's say, for instance, Down syndrome patient, the family is interested in developing a more comfortable introduction to the process of experiencing dentistry, or, for instance, a patient that oftentimes I hear from patients, you know, I'm so afraid, but every single time I go back, I'm anxious because I really don't remember what happened last time. And I think that, you know, switching the gears and perhaps slowing down, and that takes a lot of my time, but I'm willing to give
it. Oh, yeah. No, it does. I mean, when I go to the dentist, even for teeth cleaning, I need nitrous. I won't go to a dentist unless he has nitrous, because I had a very bad experience at a really young age, and it has stuck with me throughout my entire life. So I get really frightened to go.
Sure.
And to me, the worst pain is going to the dentist. I don't mind injections in the face. I'll do Botox and fillers, and I'm fine with that. You give me, I don't even need sometimes a dental block to do lip plumping. I'm okay with that. But going to the dentist and having them touch my teeth and near my gum and my nerves, that bothers me more than anything else.
Yes. I certainly can respect that, and if patients say, you know what, this is what I want, then of course we oblige. But I also always give the opportunity and share with the patient that there's an alternative, and I'm willing to slow down the treatment at my cost to allow them the opportunity to proceed. And in my experience, majority of the patients have taken me on that, and in retrospective, I don't remember one case where they've gone back to use the pre-existing method of approach.
I'll just have to fly down to Washington then. And you
can
work with me and desensitize me to going to the dentist, Right. That'll be a nice trip. I'll go see you, and then I'll go see Dr. Alster, and I'll get my
yes.
my fillers and Botox, and I'll get my teeth.
That's wonderful.
Well, it'll be a good trip.
Dr. Alster also said hello. Yeah.
Yes,
wonderful
yes,
to
thank
see you. Of course, Dr. Alster sends her regards as well.
Well, I send my regards back to her, and I'm overdue for a trip to Washington. I haven't been there in years. But I want to also ask you about online research today.
Yes.
You know, 'cause everyone's going online, and people are picking their doctors from Yelp. And
mm-hmm.
I know especially people in their 30s and 40s, everything that they choose seems to be based on a Yelp review or a Google review. But Yelp, it's even more than Google. What's your opinion about that?
Well, the one thing I think, let me start off with this. The one thing that patients perhaps I would recommend they focus on and don't undermine is the power of information on things that are early in the stage of their oral health. Because that is where very little may be required, but at the right time, would completely change the course and the progression of
their oral health.
Well, I'm asking
more, let's say you're looking for a general dentist and
yes.
You don't know where to look. So a lot of people will go on Yelp. That'll be their first place to go to look to find a dentist. And then they'll read the reviews, and based on the dentist's reviews, they'll either choose this dentist or not. And
mm-hmm.
I know many people that do everything. My daughter is one of them. She picks doctors all the time via Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
she's been pretty lucky with that, but
mm-hmm.
I don't choose my practitioners like that. But a lot of people do. What is your opinion about online searching for a dentist?
Sure. So if you don't have access to individuals who can make their own recommendation, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, that's the only opportunity or the only option, but if you do go online, a good starting point would be to search for the dental academies that involve general dentists as well as, for instance, there's the American Dental Association, Academy of General Dentistry, American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. There's the American Academy of Aesthetic Dentistry, which is a very exclusive academy, and it's only by invitation. The Prosthodontic, for instance, academies, and those organizations have, like for instance, the American Prosthodontic Society. That society has both generalists and specialists who focus on reconstruction, and those members are committed on collaborative, interdisciplinary collaborations of rehabilitation, and so those organizations have a list of members. They can be contacted, and you can certainly search by your area. But now you've narrowed, you know, in on a more academic and training-based filter, if you will. And, of course, you know, you can vet through see, you know, some individuals prefer one gender or another, or they may, for instance, you know, you can certainly filter through by academic training, geographical location. But, you know, in many of my case and my colleagues' case, you know, patients come to us from all over the nation, all over the world. So I think a good starting point is to perhaps, and this sounds perhaps basic, but to identify areas that are important to you as an individual vis-a-vis any practitioner or clinician you might need or want, and then to reflect on the training, the academic training, the continuing education training, the participation and memberships, and also the areas of focus and experience that you can see represented online. And then, of course, make an introduction to the practice.
That's excellent advice. I love that advice. That's doing your research and going to the organizations and not depending on what other people say on Yelp?
Well, it's difficult to, you know, with Yelp or other, you know, online broad collection of reviews, it's difficult to understand where they come from. The assumptions and perspective, you know, vary greatly. If word of mouth, if a direct referral cannot be made, then of course this would be, I think, one of the most prudent approaches I would, for instance, implement myself, and I have.
Excellent advice. Almost out of time, Dr. Kotka, and I want to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you. Your website is dclaserdentist.com. And what is your telephone number, Dr. Kotka?
It is 202-609-7911. And, of course, you can reach us by email as well at info@dclaserdentist.com.
And you're on Twitter at @DCLaserDentist as well, right? That's your Twitter handle. And you have a Facebook page, and your Facebook page is Washington Laser and Dentistry?
It is actually DC Laser Dentist. And for many, you know, for other details as well, we frequently post to YouTube. So if you search under my name or DC Laser Dentist, you can reach that channel as well, and you can tap into some tips on smile and maintenance options at home.
Well, that's great. Thank you. And again, I want to let listeners know that this is part one of a three-part series that Dr. Kotka will be doing on NipTuck Talk regarding dental health. And our next segment, I believe, is going to be airing the second week in May. And I want to thank everyone for listening today. And you can reach me at info@niptuckcoach.com. My Twitter handle is niptuckcoach, and my Facebook page is niptuckcoach. And I look forward to next week. And thanks again, and I'm sorry about all the technical issues today, and have a great weekend. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kotka.
Thank
have a wonderful
you.
Weekend.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed listening. Join us next week for another exciting program about the world of cosmetic surgery and beauty. To learn more about Michelle Garber, go to www.niptuckcoach.com. To consult with Michelle directly, call 415-494-7211.